Chapter 52. I throw myself onto Stormy's back, knocking him over Jamie and onto the bed. I claw his face and am about to bite his ear, intent on removing chunks of him with my teeth. When Ron pulls me off, Stormy's head is still in my grasp. He is dragged away from the bed with me. Donis! Jamie's voice cuts through my rage. Donis, let go. He spoke. Jamie isn't screaming in agony. I let go of Stormy, who drops to the floor with his hands at his face. He makes noises like when Auntie was in labor, releasing pain with repeated sounds and deep breaths. Ron yanks Stormy up and pulls him out of the trailer. Jamie stands on 2 feet. I push him back to get a better look, my heart pounding. His black dress boots are scuffed, but otherwise undamaged. No blood anywhere. The iron shackle is still around his ankle, but the chain ends abruptly after 3 links. Stormy cut Jamie free? I can't move or speak. Every ecstatic thought and feeling envelops me simultaneously. Jamie's face lights up as he watches my euphoric shock. Donis, I'm okay, but we have to get out of here. Taking my hand, he leads me down the trailer steps. A swarm of law enforcement officers rounds the Black Rocks. They arrive in time to escort Stormy back to the mainland for questioning. One guy in a suit stays at his side, a federal agent, most likely. Just before they step out of view, Stormy looks over his shoulder at me. I don't know why he helped Jamie, but I'm grateful. I put my left hand on my hip, even though it hurts my shoulder. My other hand painfully raises an imaginary feather in thanks at the 4 honor beats I hear in my head. Stormy gives a half-nod acknowledgement before walking beyond the edge of the rocks. You did it, Jamie exclaims. Oh, Donis, you did it. Euphoria continues to wash over me. My body starts shivering, but I don't mind. Jamie and I are both outside the trailer, alive. What happened? Jamie asks, looking more closely at my face. Car accident with Bobby LaFleur and Levi, I say. I'm okay, just punched myself in the nose when the airbag went off. Ron, we need medical attention, he calls out. Coast Guard coming around the North Channel. Should be here any minute, Ron says. How did you keep Mike from killing you? I ask Jamie. Mike didn't say anything while we waited. I don't think he thought I was worth the effort. When the deadline passed, I told Mike that no matter what he may have done or known about, he was only 17, and with his dad's connections, he had favorable odds in court. Why would you try to help him? I ask incredulously. When you surround an army, leave an outlet free. Do not press a desperate foe too hard, Jamie says before grinning. Mike and his dad aren't the only ones who know Sun Tzu. Whoa, that's clever. Well, then he took off and left me alone in the trailer with no heat, water, or food. The more time went by, the more I worried something happened to you. There is fear and concern in the softness of Jamie's voice. I heard someone quietly approach the trailer, he continued. I didn't know if Mike had changed his mind or if Levi had returned. I never thought it would be Stormy. He peeked in, saw me, saw the chain, and grabbed the hatchet from the woodpile stored under the trailer. I asked what he was going to do, because I really didn't know which way it was going to go. What did he say? I asked breathlessly. Stormy never said a word. The only sound he made was when you went at him. A scream breaches the cove. We whip our heads around to see Auntie running towards us. Oh my God, what happened? Auntie's eyes are wide with terror. When she reaches too quickly for my face, I pull back. Auntie bites the back of her hand and tears leak down her face. I'm okay, I assure her, and I mean it. I feel lightheaded, like I am Geesh Gwaebe, happy and tipsy. Everything surreal and... Wait, I stare back at Auntie. What are you doing here? Sini called from the ferry, said you look scared, and Levi was driving. Your mom said you were missing. No one wanted to take it seriously because Jamie was missing too. Everyone tried telling her you ran away together, but she insisted something was wrong. Auntie cautiously inspects my face with gentle fingertips. TJ came to me. He was scared you might become the next Robin. He told me how widespread meth is and how certain officers were looking the other way. Judge Firekeeper was letting some people go when TJ knew the case files were solid. He didn't know where to turn. She continues talking. I've been meeting with the elders and some traditional healers about the drugs in the community. It all fell into place when Sini called. I was racing to the ferry when Minnie's car flew past and I saw you behind the wheel being chased by cops. So I followed you. She saved me, I tell my aunt. Sini boxed Levi in. I don't know how she coordinated it with Minnie and Johnsy. Auntie grins. Tribal Youth Council Service Project. They taught the elders how to use their cell phones and they set up a group text. Sini told me she sent a text message for anyone on the ferry to block the truck that Levi was driving. I love my elders. I thought I had no resources on the ferry, except for one lone elder. But one led to another and another, a resource I never anticipated during my time of dire need. I am reminded that our elders are our greatest resource, embodying our culture and community. Their stories connect us to our language, medicines, land, clans, songs, and traditions. They are a bridge between the before and the now, guiding those of us who will carry on in the future. We honor our heritage and our people, those who are alive and those who've passed on. That's important because it keeps the ones we lose with us. My grandparents, Uncle David, Lily, Dad. I feel giddy as Auntie Jamie and I laugh. The sound surrounds us, echoes off the black rocks and fills the space like an amphitheater. I laugh until I'm dizzy and my stomach hurts. I wince and touch my right side. It feels rock hard and swollen. Auntie pulls Jamie to her for a half hug. His eyes sparkle. Jamie is alive. It's such an exhilarating feeling that I begin to shiver. The investigation will wrap up. People will finally learn the truth. There will be justice for those who were taken from us. I want justice too, for what Grant Edwards did to me. It makes me nauseous to even think about him. And just like that, something heavy and dark reaches inside my chest, as if it's not enough that I want to puke, but his name in a thought manifests into a fist squeezing my heart. I gasp, but it feels like one of these rocks has fallen onto my chest. I cannot breathe. Jamie's face transforms. His incandescent smile dims in slow motion before becoming something blank for an instant and then turning into panic. My legs go out from under me. I blink and I'm on my back, one arm over my head like Sini. I cannot catch my breath to mimic her trill. I see the overhang of black rocks and a beautiful sky beyond. That pretty color the sky gets when the sun is setting and the light has more tricks to reveal, saving the best colors for that in-between time. Jamie's face blocks my view. I want to brush him away, but my hand remains against the cold pebbles that make me shiver even harder. Auntie is on her knees next to Jamie. Their faces mouth words to me. She touches my abdomen, but I can't catch my breath to scream. Her eyes are wide with terror. I don't understand why they're so scared. The pain isn't so bad anymore. Even my shivering has stopped. I just want to see the sky. A combination of purple and gray mixing to become lilac. My mother's favorite color. Her favorite scent. Sweet little flowers that bloom for such a short time. But lilac bushes are hardy, surviving cold temperatures. They can live for over 100 years. I want my mom. She is who I am thinking about. My strong, beautiful mother. When I die.